Hello and welcome back to Labor Podcast. This is season 8, episode 3, and I'd like to wish you a very happy day after Boxing Day. Because today is, fun fact, December 27th.
Is it? That's fun.
No, it's not, Sam.
Yeah, it is.
That's crazy.
It's, well, I won't say what day we're recording this.
It is for the people who are listening to this podcast the day that it came out, yes.
Michelle, what did you get for Christmas?
Me from the past is certainly hoping...
What?
I had a restful vacation. Oh, wait, this is hard. We're in the future. We're time traveling.
We record all of these episodes minutes before they release.
Live, yes, yes. Well, for Christmas, I went to Mexico. So that was pretty awesome. First real vacation in quite a while. So very nice. You might notice my tan.
And now you have to get back to work.
Well, I don't know what you guys do over at Windover, but... Here, we don't go back till January 2nd, so that's nice.
Wow.
Hey, that sounds like a really interesting idea.
That's crazy.
We're strict Monday through Friday. Doesn't matter if there's holidays or anything. We work through it. We had a great little 5-minute Christmas celebration at the start of our all hands meeting on Monday. Ben really seemed to enjoy it.
I don't know if she can tell that you're kidding.
And that is why you all are far more successful than I am.
Wow, she's roasting us now. Now we're getting roasted.
Yeah.
No, I actually mean it. Like, you guys actually release videos. We barely do. So.
No, we don't. We have the 4-day work week. We're
oh,
chill.
Yeah, you're right. The winner of the Streamy for Show of the Year is so much less successful than these chumps.
Oh my God. Okay, we're moving on. We're in episode 3.
Quantity always trumps quality.
That's what I always say.
Anyway, everything is a joke. We have 4-day work weeks. We're very ethical.
I think we do objectively work less than Michelle and her team.
Yeah, that's true. 4-day work week. We're chilling every week.
It's Christmas every week.
Oh my God.
Jay chilling every week.
That's true. Every Friday is Christmas.
That's really nice.
Anyway, so we start at airport.
We start at airport and then we go to other airport and then we end.
Yep.
Roll credits.
Great episode.
Well, you guys don't end at an airport.
That's true, actually. So, y'all, congratulations.
Thank you.
You made your connection.
We did it.
So, I think it's pretty clear in the episode how you made that work, but it was a bit of an edge case, right?
I believe it is quite clear.
Yes. This is a great travel tip for people who are extremely irresponsible, is that if you do want to get on a flight that is... going to leave in like 20 minutes.
Just beg.
Get them to put you on standby for the next flight and then immediately get taken off of standby on that flight. It's awesome.
Assuming there's availability.
Yeah, buy a ticket on the flight later and then they'll put you on standby for the... Well, because what's crazy about this situation is we're talking to this lady, right? And we're like, can we please get a ticket on this flight? And she's like, no. And we're like, please, though, we really want to take it. She's like, no, there isn't a way to do it. And we're like, is there any way to do it? And then she very casually is just like, oh, well, I could do this, which would solve all your problems and do exactly what you want. And it was like, we're like, is there any way to get on this flight? She's like, it won't let me book. We're like, please, can you do it? She's like, yeah, I can book you on the later one. We're like, we can't take the later one. Is there anything you can do? And she's like, oh, I could do this. It would completely work. It would be exactly what you wanted. I feel like she just invented it on the spot.
It doesn't surprise me because, again, what we did is not a thing that anyone would ever have to do, really.
It's true.
In any context.
Well, the more real travel tip that I feel like people don't know enough is that most airlines in the U.S. now have policies where you can, for either free or a relatively minimal fee, go standby on an earlier or later flight on the same day, which is very useful if you're like, you know, hanging around in the city, you're done with whatever you're there for and want to get home earlier. She might have waived some fees. I know that some airlines, if you don't have status, they'll charge you a fee for that. So it might have been a little bit outside of what had been by the book, but that's pretty common. The other travel tip is that you can get a long way towards what you want if you're just really polite and nice and also beg.
Yeah, basically.
It was awesome. I remember when we found out you guys had made the flight, we were so confused. And you said on the phone that it was a strategy you didn't want to reveal. And I've been waiting ever since you said that to find out what it was and what a clever idea it was. So,
well, I will say, and I don't want to foreshadow too much, but it will come up later that we use this standby thing to get onto flights.
Really? Oh.
It is kind of an amazing thing where we actually learn something and then remember it and are able to use it.
It is bonkers. Pretty exciting.
Which is something that truly does not happen in our lives all that much.
From our side, it was pretty surprising. Like, the thing that happens in this game is you sort of learn interesting things through silence.
Yes.
So it's like, there's not like the one moment that you learn that something really bad has happened, but rather it's like the slow creeping anxiety of, oh no, this is not what I thought should be happening right now. I thought I should be getting messages and stuff. And then you just don't. And then you eventually decide, huh, they must have really done whatever. And this is another thing that I think will come up again later.
It will.
Yeah. Because like I had been looking, I checked like 5 different Delta flights to confirm the 45-minute booking cutoff thing and was pretty sure and, you know, had not thought of the whole standby idea. So yeah, I was pretty surprised. But it was certainly getting to the phase where it was like, I was starting to get worried about how badly it was going for y'all and whether that would lead to a good show. Because like, if you had not made that flight, you would have been really uber mega screwed.
No, we really, and this is on us, we did not ever do a simulation where someone got stuck in Anchorage that night because we did not think it was going to be possible. And so when that became an extremely real possibility, we were like, we have no idea what this will do to the game and it might ruin it.
Yep.
We were deeply scared.
Wow.
Yep.
So we got lucky that did not derail the whole game.
Well, it was also funny because like, I kind of thought from you guys' perspective that there would be concern on Sam's part. Yeah, like this might mess up the whole game. But then obviously all we ever see on camera is you're thrilled beyond belief. That it might happen.
Well, I didn't know that it would break the game, in my defense.
But it works out. It works out.
Well, you know, I'm very used to, on my side, the flip side of luck like this.
Yes.
So there's some good, what's the term, Schadenfreude or whatever?
Schadenfreude.
Yeah, there you go. When this happens, and it was a bit cathartic to have such a lucky, I mean, I guess we didn't get the moose thing, but like aside from that, our first 2 days were quite lucky, which was a novel and nice experience. I will say, as much as I try to enjoy jet lag, no matter what is thrown at me, it's certainly easier to enjoy when you're winning.
It's true. It's true.
That makes sense.
Well, because I think another thing about when you're winning, if you get really behind, you also feel like maybe you're ruining the show.
Yeah.
You're like, am I playing so badly that I've made the show bad? Which like,
yeah,
you also really don't want.
That's a lot of weight for you guys to carry. I feel like people need to hear just like the balancing act that y'all are playing, not only as people on camera who are playing the game, because obviously I don't think any of you guys, maybe the guests, maybe I have the biggest privilege in being able to truly like freely say or do whatever. But y'all are also thinking about it in terms of a story producing capacity. And typically on a game show, those are two separate positions.
Yeah.
There's talent and story producer. But y'all do such a great job of balancing talent, story producer, and game master all in one.
Well, I think through the seasons now, we and certainly I at least have gotten much better at like really segmenting out those sides of the brain. Because like when I'm in the game, the narrative, the story, it doesn't matter. I'm in the game. And of course, like there's the back of my mind that is thinking like, oh, this is really good or this is really bad for whatever it is. But there is never a scenario where I think any of us are like, I'm going to do this because it will lead to that better story. And I certainly don't.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course. Of course.
There are certainly times when like, I'm like, oh, this kind of sucks because like, this is obviously the best thing for me to do. And therefore I'm going to do it. But it's going to lead to the worst story or, you know, the less dramatic story or whatever. But there's also the flip side. The flip side feels awesome when you identify that thing that you know is going to lead to an incredible, you know, moment or story or whatever. That's always fun.
Another thing I really admired about you guys, too, is just the integrity and respect of each other in the game. Like, for example, there was a situation, I think it occurs later in the show. I don't think this is a spoiler, but basically, like, we had tried to call you guys at the conclusion of one of the challenges and the call didn't go through and the next card to come up was a significant one. And I remember we had begun to start the path of pursuing that second challenge and Sam was like, wait, they didn't answer. We need to communicate to them. And so we actually went backwards, went back to the spot where we pulled the flop and waited. And I just thought, like, that's really cool. Like, that happened a few times where there are opportunities to consider, like, oh, I can take these few seconds to get ahead. And every time, all three of you guys were extremely respectful of one another. I just think these are things people need to know. So I'm saying it.
Well, you know, the audience keeps us honest, you know. I don't know how good of people we are, but like if we do anything real shitty, people get really mad at us. And that has made us better people.
It's true.
At least on camera.
Okay.
Well, I also think like we are the game designers. So as much as we want to win, we also want the game to be played properly and fairly. You know, like it's almost like we are screwing ourselves over as game designers if we game players, you know.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that was like a moment where that was not even really something on camera. Like you wouldn't have noticed that on camera.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think we cut around it because it's confusing.
Yeah. We don't want to piss off each other or disappoint each other by cutting those corners, because we know that the game only works if we have the integrity to play it as designed. But anyways, let's get back to this episode.
Right.
As nice as the compliments and stuff are.
I'll keep going.
Well, I will say, I just want to make sure that we get to address that the Zodiac Zone is introduced in this episode.
Yeah!
While we are waiting to find out if we get on our plane.
I was so excited when I saw the graphics for it. Who did them?
Oh, man.
I think Lily did them.
Lily. Okay.
I think it was Lily, but we can check on that for you.
Can double check.
Well, I mean, shout out to the amazing motion graphics team. It was so cool. Like, I remember, you know, obviously we talked in a prior podcast episode about how I forced everyone here against their will to download CoStar, except for Adam, who already had it. And I just thought it'd be really funny, like, not even necessarily on camera, but just as a fun experiment to see if what astrology said would happen would actually happen in the game. And it's pretty funny, I think, throughout, like when it's right and when it's wrong, of course. But the graphics were really fun. I'm very honored to have gotten a segment in Chatlag. So thank you, everyone.
Anyone can have their own show within a show. You just have to assert it. You just have to look at the camera and say it enough times.
Except for Choo 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 Derailed.
That's true.
Yeah, I was going to say, that doesn't really feel true.
Well, you didn't try hard enough. You could have made it impossible to cut around, but you didn't.
Noted.
That was your failure. Just saying.
You know what's coming.
No, don't say that to him. 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 Okay, anyway.
Sam, you didn't even try to do a choo-choo-choo this entire show.
No, it's dead.
I'm kind of sad.
We killed it.
Is it, Ben?
It's dead. Long live Snack Zone. Choo-choo-choo is dead.
It's Scotty's show.
Okay, okay, okay. All right, got it. I get where the politics lie here.
I will keep Scotty's memory alive.
Whoa.
Anyway, okay, so Michelle, we get to Seattle, which is very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
As nice as Alaska was, it was nice to get to slightly warmer weather and slightly more daylight.
Yes.
And it's weird to like be like, oh, it was nice to get to the Seattle weather where it was dumping raining out and 45 degrees. But relative to, you know, the 25 degrees and 6 hours of daylight or whatever in Anchorage, that was kind of nice. So we, and mostly you, had kind of come up with this plan for what to do on the ground, because our flight was delayed. We got in about an hour late. So we ended up with only, I think, about 2 hours, maybe a smidge less between when we landed and when the rest period would start. So you had gone through the whole list on the flight, I believe, and sort of identified order of operations, right?
A bit. I mean, it was certainly a team effort, but I did notice that the shot of our master notes spreadsheet did make it in, which as an Excel spreadsheet nerd, I was very excited about. And basically, I don't know how anyone who plays this doesn't do something like this, because I was so confused about like who has what tickets, what could they have used based on X, Y, and Z. So we would have like a chart that was our hand and then a chart of what we thought was Adam and Ben's hand based on context clues and then all of the potential cards for each day. And so basically, I was going through each of the potential cards for the rest of the day and made a if-then tree of if this card comes up, do we go for it or do we not? And if we do go for it, what are the like 10 places on Google Maps that it could be achieved relative to the airport? And this type of work was such a crucial part of, I feel like, everything we were doing.
Yeah. For sure.
But yes, we came up with the strategy.
I mean, that was hugely useful throughout. I mean, I'll say that I always have a version of that, but it's never nearly that organized. And I usually do it all myself. So it's nice for you to do most of it. But yeah, that was hugely useful. Ben and Adam, I'm curious, how did you organize on your side?
Yeah, I'd love to know.
In our giant brains, we kept the information in our giant noggin. Oh my goodness. I actually think it was pure hubris that we did not have a spreadsheet.
Well, I think the truth is I at least did a lot of simulations as we were play testing and developing, and you did a decent number, Ben. And I think like that kind of gives me a similar working knowledge to what you get through that spreadsheet, Michelle, of like, you know, for example, like I'm just looking at this and you have like, there's a card that could come up on day three that has to do with going to a Goodwill, and you like know where the Goodwills are. And it's like, I also know where the Goodwills are in Seattle because I've had that card come up in simulations. So like, to an extent, I think like when you develop the game, you develop a little bit more of a working knowledge of like where stuff is and how the tickets and stuff cards get used.
That is true, but no spoilers, it does come back to bite us in the ass that we are not keeping track of things as well as you guys.
Yeah, there are times where it turns out Michelle was more prepared than we were.
Yeah.
I'd say that's definitely true.
Well, I'm very curious to see that play out. It definitely felt the opposite. I think it's amazing that you guys have all of that in your head. Wow, that's awesome. I mean, yeah, of course, you have the advantage of the playtesting, but even then...
You know.
And this is why it's a professional sport.
Exactly.
We're athletes.
Yep.
Professional athletes.
Famously, all the professional sports involve spreadsheets.
They do.
Yes, they do. Stats, baseball.
Yeah, but not while you're playing.
I'm going to be the guy that does Moneyball for jet lag.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, I kind of feel like Michelle did that.
Michelle did Moneyball for jet lag.
That's true. Michelle already did Moneyball on us.
Anyway, so... We do face cookie. It's relatively quick.
The footage of that is great, though.
Yes.
When we wrote that challenge, I was like, I hope it'll be fun, but who knows? But then the footage is great.
Well, I don't know if this came through in the edit, but also something that I think was really funny is like both Sam and I tried together. And then by the end, we realized that it actually turned out to be a fantastic team challenge in that like Sam was directing me while right. I was moving the cookie. Right. And that actually is what led us to success. So
no, that was big.
Yeah. Teamwork for the win.
Yeah. Because it turns out it's really hard to sort of like visualize where on your face the cookie is and what the contours of your face are, mm-hmm. I think. So it's like having someone who's looking at it and showing you which direction to go makes it a lot easier. But yeah, that led us to get it done pretty quickly. And then, I mean, we knew the second that that came up that, you know, we were heading there.
Yeah. I just wanted to point out at like 7:16, and I'm sure they're blurred, but like one of my favorite frames in the episode is Michelle is like completely splayed out, like arms out, doing face cookie, super focused. And like an old lady being pushed in a wheelchair just like goes past her.
Oh, no. Like, just like, what? I had no idea. Oh no, I'm so inconsistent.
No, you don't hit her. You don't come anywhere close to hitting her. But it's okay. Just this very funny juxtaposition of like, you're just like, so locked in. And then it's just like people just kind of going about their day at the airport, just like moving past you. It's really funny.
I feel like we've all gotten good when filming in public about not really worrying about filming in public, at least to a certain extent.
Right.
And not really like caring that people can obviously tell that we're filming in public. But then you watch the clips and then see all the people who are staring at you. And that always reverts quickly to the self-conscious direction, at least for me.
It is tough. Well, because there's something very funny about the nature of filming yourself, like front-facing camera, which is that like you can't see the people behind you, obviously, because you're looking at the camera. But then when you watch the footage, the camera can see all the people behind you and you can see that all of them are staring at you.
Oh, yeah, because she went on the back camera. Is that?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Exactly.
I'm jumping ahead a bit, but the absolute best moment of this is when y'all are in the diner the next morning.
Oh, yeah.
And there's the guy who's like sitting right next to you. And he is just looking at you guys with such contempt.
We blur him.
Yeah, it's too bad that we have to blur whenever we have a close face. But like his expression, it's like, it is 7 fucking a.m. and there are these kids making a YouTube video while I'm just trying to wake up and have my freaking pancakes. And it's like the best expression I've ever seen among the background character.
Well, it is unfortunate that like being a YouTuber filming in public is the most obnoxious thing a person can be.
Yeah.
Sort of in society generally.
Yeah. Apologies. Yeah.
But you guys do it in a very elegant way, in my opinion, you know, like just all the various rules of the game. Like there are rules about when it is and isn't okay to film. And I think you guys take into a lot of consideration about all of that. I also think doing this, like on my channel, I don't really ever vlog in this nature because it gives me a lot of anxiety. And I'm really glad that one of the things that I learned doing this was how I could overcome some of that fear of like just unabashedly, politely being myself in public, if that makes sense.
Totally.
Maybe not like face cooking in the way of a grandma trying to get on her plane, but like it inspired me a lot.
Yeah, it's like a good confidence exercise to force yourself to film a YouTube video in public because it's a good reminder that like, yeah, people might stare, but ultimately they're going to forget about it in 5 minutes and will never remember that you've even existed and therefore you shouldn't care. And that's kind of the case with anything like this. But anyway, we go to Archie McPhee's.
Yes.
And we do random stuff. And look what I have here. You remember that?
Oh my God.
The audience can't see, but it's our rubber chicken that we got there.
The rubber chicken. You do.
We really didn't have room.
We go to Archie McPhee. I tank the Nebula budget by asking for a montage that you said was going to be expensive for Ben and Adam to do.
I love that montage.
We also didn't do it.
We have to give credit to Jack McCall, who's an editor who works with us, who is the one that actually put that montage together. He did a really great job.
I had a lot of fun filming that.
The thing that I didn't necessarily expect from that store was like, I kind of expected, you know, like kind of a normal novelty store with a bunch of like random stuff, like novelty stuff, but it just had like genuinely random stuff. Like it had like washers, like little like building materials, and like it just had like little jars, and then it had like various types of tape. But it wasn't even like a craft store because it also had like, you know, freaking like rubber chickens and pez. Like it was truly the most eclectic mix of things. And it was like very little logic.
It was hashtag random.
It was indeed random.
I know, like nailed the selection there.
Thank you.
I mean, I was just surprised that like, I don't know how you would even describe the store because it was no like logic to the selection.
None.
What are you signaling at me?
It's hashtag random. I was doing the hashtag. I'm saying it's hashtag random. That's how you would describe it.
I have never in my life seen this.
Hashtag? You never seen that? I'm doing it with two fingers and you go down on a cross. Hashtag.
Adam's doing gang
I'm drawing signs. A hashtag.
I have never in my life.
Hashtag. Michelle, you know what this is, right? You're cool and hip with the kids. Hashtag.
I'm enjoying this. I'm not familiar, but I'm not as hip as Ben is, so.
I don't think that this is a thing.
Okay, fine.
Moving on.
Moving on. So y'all are on the flight this entire time. Do you have anything to say about your flight?
Mm.
I was so thrilled to be on it. It was crazy.
It had pretty views. Did you see the views? Only on the left side.
Beautiful. Like, yeah, we got some nice footage.
Yeah. Because like you're like flying over like the area of like Ketchikan and Juneau and like Southeast Alaska where we've been in prior seasons and where Alaska Silent Summer, the Nebula original documentary produced by Wendover Productions was filmed. But yeah, very pretty views. But yeah, on our side, we basically finish our day by identifying, of course, we don't know what the flop is going to be the next morning. So similar to the last morning, we decide, okay, let's go to a good location for the card that we'd most want to respond to if it came up. And of course, that was the Mile High Challenge, the run a drunk mile to get to Denver. So we go to a Safeway downtown and just end our day in the parking lot. And that's about it.
Yeah, this was something you guys did that we don't ever really do, which is like position yourselves at night for what would be the best card in the morning if it came up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which we kind of were just like, I guess we were just positioned more generally. We were like, let's just be where we can get an Uber so that we can do whatever needs to be done.
Right.
But like you guys were heavily optimizing for the best possible card. Like you were like, that's the one we want to be ready for.
Right. But like, I mean, these first 2 days, I think we had the time and opportunity to do that, whereas you didn't.
Yeah.
But I mean, day one, it worked out. And then of course we know immediately it didn't really work out for day two, but it was in the direction we wanted to go to anyway. It was in the direction of Seattle Airport. And it was about as far as we could have gotten anyway towards that direction with a time left. So, oh, we forgot to acknowledge, I mean, I don't know how much there is to say, but the airline selection for hashtag random.
Oh yeah, that's big.
That was big.
The American Airlines one.
Of the options, like American Airlines is like by some measures the biggest airline in the world, I think by number of aircraft. So like that was some really nice luck versus like, I mean, we could have gotten like Frontier, which is not bad. It's just, you know, way less of a selection, or like JetBlue, I think. Mm-hmm. So that was a big thing.
That probably had one of the most variable rewards in the game, which is that like you could have gotten a ticket that would have basically potentially never really been useful. Mm-hmm. And you ended up getting one that was like useful almost anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so we end our day. We stayed at the beautiful Citizen M Hotel, which is kind of the unofficial hotel of jet lag. I indoctrinated Michelle.
It's the unofficial hotel of Sam Denby, I would say.
Well, by force.
You're going to get us murdered.
Yeah, Sam brought me there. He's like, I've got a cool zillennial spot.
Is that what he said?
And I was like, whoa.
He called it a zillennial spot?
Yeah.
Not
He said like Gen Z millennial. He didn't say zillennial.
He wouldn't.
Yeah. Sam did not say zillennial, but you said millennial Gen Z.
That's another new thing I'm learning right now. I didn't know zillennial is a thing.
I never even heard of that. That's awesome. I'm going to start saying that.
Sam is always trying to show people the coolest hotel that he can find. And it's always just like a place that has a bunch of weird shit in it.
Yeah. They usually look like IKEA.
It was pretty crazy.
But the real reason why these hotels are great for jet lag is they always have blazing fast Wi-Fi.
That is
true.
So I was
able to upload the backup of all of day one and two, which is like, you never see this, but stress levels, certainly for me, the longer it's been since we got an internet backup of the footage, the higher my stress levels go.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's very variable whether we have one of those 1 megabit per second upload speed hotels or 100 megabit per second. And that makes all the difference between whether we're getting stuff on Dropbox. But yeah, in this case, stress went down.
Yeah, we were not able to back up for a little while. I think I backed up to my personal phone until we overnighted. I think in Seattle, I was able to back up, but I wasn't able to back up in Reykjavik.
Shockingly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Next morning, we
flop.
Nothing interesting, really, on our side, or nothing we thought was worth going after. Of course, y'all don't really have any option out of Seattle at that point, right?
No.
We didn't have anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even think we had any tickets. I think we had a car ticket and that was it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So obviously you got to do something. And I guess the Guy Fieri one was kind of clearly the most valuable, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's like, it's a pretty long, how long is the flight?
I think it's a 600.
I think it was 800 maybe?
No, 600? I think it was 600.
I think it's 600.
And it was also easy. Like you just go somewhere, you know? So like.
Mm-hmm.
We really actually in the game ended up identifying some locations that you could fly to with that one that we had not previously thought of.
Right.
And that was pretty exciting.
Like what?
Idaho Falls.
Like, I don't think we had talked about Idaho Falls before. I'm not even really sure we had talked all that much about Reno.
No, Reno had come up. Yeah, but Idaho Falls, I don't think had.
I mean, it certainly helped to be in Seattle, which is like such a big hub airport.
Oh, yeah.
That really gave a lot of optionality. Whereas if you did that card in like, you know, for example, like Boise, where we go next, that would have been really unuseful.
Well, I really like that cut where I think it's Michelle is like, where can you even go that starts with Guy Fieri? And then it cuts to Ben and I and we're like, Yakima, Reno, Great Falls, Idaho Falls, like we're running through all of them.
Yeah, that was great.
So I think on our side, Michelle, we really didn't consider things for long because I think we didn't really want to get into like the really small towns. And the biggest place that I think we kind of had previously identified that you could get to with that card was Reno, which is not bad. It's just like in the wrong direction, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Like Idaho Falls is more in the right direction, but it's a small airport. So it's not a great place to put yourself to, especially if you haven't already gotten a route out of there. I think in our minds, does that sound right?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And, you know, we had the privilege of having a card where we could get out of there. So we're like, okay, let's go while the flop isn't ultra competitive. And hopefully we've landed before something super competitive comes up.
Yeah. Because the thing that we had identified was the fact that a lot of the things that would come up were not useful until 9 a.m. local time.
Right.
Because a lot of the stores don't open until 9 a.m. Not all, as we later find out, but a lot of them. And the flight that we ended up taking landed in Boise at 10 a.m. Boise time, which is 9 a.m. Seattle time.
Right.
So we figured like we were losing kind of the most unhelpful time of day to be doing challenges.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So might as well make some moves.
Well, there's sort of two parts of that that are interesting. One part is like, you have to be really strategic about when you're on a plane because you're just completely incapacitated from doing challenges then and you're vulnerable. But then also it was really interesting. It doesn't end up mattering, but it was smart that you bring it up that like, by going to Boise, you'll be an hour ahead and everything will be open an hour earlier functionally.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Because if we assume everything opens at 10 a.m., it's going to be 10 a.m. for you in Boise. It's going to be 9 a.m. for us in Seattle. So more stuff will be open for you. And that didn't end up mattering, but it like certainly could have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it's pretty straightforward trip for us. First, well, actually, no, not first on time, but, you know, on time flight, quick flight, easy enough. Not much more to say about that. And then y'all, you know, go ahead and get stared at by the guy at the diner and have your breakfast, right?
Yeah, that place was pretty good.
Ben, how's that pancake? It was awesome. I don't really like pancakes. And I also usually my tummy's unsettled in the morning. I was like having a little bit and was like really struggling with it. And Ben just attacked it. It was incredible.
Yeah.
Teamwork.
Yeah, I really had to pump it into high gear for that one.
It's like there are some challenges where like, you know, I have to take charge that involve like running or balance, you know, and Ben is sort of along for the ride. But this challenge was really Ben taking charge and I was along for the ride.
Eating pancakes, that's my wheelhouse. That's where I thrive.
And then y'all go and do the roadside attraction one, right?
Nope, we do the Goodwill.
No, this is the Goodwill.
Oh, right, the Goodwill, yeah.
Oh my gosh, that Goodwill... That was crazy because another reason we left was like what you just said about when Goodwills would open and the fact that y'all found one that was open that early, but then it was also super weird.
Yes.
It was crazy.
I love the animation, by the way. That was so fun.
Oh, yeah. Elisa did that. She did a great job.
I mean, I think it was specifically because it was these weird kind of
outlet
bin dump Goodwill yes. style things. Like that is specifically why it was open early. Because yes. I think on our side, we had done like a quick look. And we saw that, like, we just scrolled through Google and saw, like, everyone open at 9. And we just didn't get to this one. So we assumed, I mean, it wasn't, like, a thing where we ever, you know, looked that hard. But, like, we kind of, I think, just assumed that all of them must be like that.
Mm-hmm.
So we were confused
right.
when y'all did it. Because we thought, on our end, that we would start in Boise by going to the Goodwill. And we had perfect timing for that.
Right.
Because we were landing at, like, 9:45 and would have had just enough time to get there, probably minutes before you could have started.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right. And it doesn't totally come through, but like, yeah, like you were planning to do that challenge. Like that was part of your plan.
Mm-hmm.
It's not on camera very much, but like.
Yeah, it was certainly never anything that we were like putting all our hopes and dreams on, but we thought that was like the best plan for the first thing to do in Boise.
Oh, one quick behind the scene thing. When we were putting our ties on, these like teenage girls saw us and they were like, "Are you having a little video moment?" And we were like, yeah.
And we were having a little video moment.
What? A video moment?
It was really funny because they were like, "You're like teaching people how to tie ties." And we were like, "No, this would be a really, can you imagine if this was just a normal YouTube video that's like, here's how to tie a tie?" We decided to film it at this location at this time with the camera that far away from us.
They were also the ones that explained what the situation was, which was that like,
oh yeah,
it was the reason that this Goodwill was so hectic and why people were lining up outside of it before it opened was like, it's this big industry of like going to these Goodwill outlets and like rifling through clothes until you find something that might be worth something and then you resell it. And apparently people make a lot of money.
It's the resale market.
Doing that.
Wow. Yeah.
There's a good Planet Money episode about this.
Yeah. And I won't go into it too much because I mean, I explained it in the episode, but like it was chaos in there. I could not believe, I was really sad I couldn't film because it was a true like crazy slice of America. But if you Google like Goodwill outlet, like shopping begins, you can see what it's like in those and it's nuts.
Wow.
So on our side, I mean, I don't think that there's a ton more to say about kind of the rest of the challenges. They're all, I think, fairly straightforward. We kind of cut this in a way where it's not clear. The critical thing for the Strava challenge that we found out was that we were initially doing it using my Garmin watch mm-hmm. as the recording thing, which is what I normally use to integrate with Strava to like track runs and stuff. But it turns out that when you do that, it'll like smooth the corners and stuff when it uploads it to Strava. So it makes it a really unuseful but smoother shape. But Michelle found out that like if you just record it directly on the Strava app, it'll show you as you're doing it what the shape you're making is. So that was critical to making that work, because we honestly did actually invest a decent amount of time in that challenge.
We tried for a while, yeah.
Yeah, in a few different spots.
And I think also what helped was we were originally in a parking garage.
Right,
yeah. And then we were like, okay, let's leave the airport. We're going to go to a random grocery store. I think we went to the grocery store in case the pumpkin came up. I can't remember.
Yeah.
But we were trying to think like a few challenges ahead potentially. And so then we did it in that parking lot.
Yeah. And then we go do our rock climbing thing, which, I mean, similar to Anchorage, it's like part of what I love about the Mountain West is like we were just like 10 or 15 minutes from this Walmart that we started at, or this grocery store that we started at in downtown Boise at the airport. And suddenly we're out in nature at like this incredible rock climbing spot, but also one that was like fairly legit rock climbing that you should have ropes for.
Yeah, definitely. We got there and I was like, we are out of our league here.
Yeah. So it took a little bit to find a spot that would be like safe. And I apologize if anyone's disappointed that I didn't YOLO it up to a really tricky section, but I had a whole 3 days of game left after this and I didn't want to break my ankle. So I know it might have looked lame.
I was impressed.
Thank you, Michelle.
Sam just sent it. It was crazy.
Yep.
I mean, one thing that you really realized when playing jet lag, and I mean, you guys realized this, not realized, but really experienced this episode, is like, if you wake up really early, the amount of things that you can do in a day is crazy.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
That's why I wake up at 5 a.m. every day.
It really is. That's a great point.
Like, you guys woke up at a Safeway. You went to the airport. You flew to Boise. You, like, did this Strava thing. You went rock climbing. You bought a pumpkin. You went to Home Depot. And then, I mean, we're only halfway through the day when this episode ends.
Yeah, I mean, we're not quite at conclusion yet. But I will say, this is certainly one of the longest days of my life. And probably Michelle's too.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. And you'll see in episode 4 how much more else can happen in a day.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Adam, I think that's actually a really good point. And it was a good reminder for me too. Like, it kind of honestly reminded me one of the first military challenges that I did.
Oh,
I went to
yeah.
Marine boot camp for 3 days. And obviously there you're waking up at 3 a.m. mm-hmm. doing God knows what. And it's like, man, if I, or when I believe in myself to wake up early, to be disciplined, and to not like give myself any time to second guess my own power, I can do so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
And jet lag has a very interesting way of lighting that fire under your ass too. So
early to rise is where it's at. This is why I'm 5 a.m. every day. I know it seems crazy.
Sam's a big early boy.
Yeah.
He's an early boy, that guy.
Wow.
We are basically like a branch of the military.
Yeah.
It's sort of the same thing.
So, yeah, because I do force everyone to report to our 5:30 stand-up meeting every morning, right?
Absolutely.
It's true.
What?
That's a joke.
Okay,
no,
good.
It's a joke. Anyway, so I don't think there's too much more to say. I mean, we do the pretty straightforward military-industrial complex one just by going to Home Depot. Y'all do the roadside attraction one.
Hat and boots. Giant hat and boots are awesome. I love the giant hat and boots.
Go visit them.
That was really cool.
They are awesome. It was an awesome location for y'all, let's say, in terms of like right on your route to the airport, basically.
Oh,
it was extremely convenient.
Extremely convenient.
Just empty.
Yeah.
They're just there.
Not a soul was there. I was like, look, man, if I live next to this thing, I'd be there every damn day. This place rocks.
I learned so much about America doing this too, like going to Archie McPhee or seeing you guys do the cowboy boots and hat and stuff. These are all things I didn't even know what, like, I'm going to spoil things if I say things, but like some of the other cards that come along the way in the following days that turn out to be like roadside attractions that are all across America or something. I didn't even know these things existed. So.
America's weird and really big.
Thanks for teaching me a lot of bizarre American geology and history.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I love about America seasons are, as you're saying, it's weird and you can also be weird in it and nobody really cares.
Yeah.
That's truly the American dream. But of course, we end this episode with certainly the most pivotal card pull so far.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
And we all understood that.
Yes.
We all understood the influence of being able to go directly to Denver. Because not only is that a huge distance for either of us, But Denver's a massive airline hub. Yes. And it's in a good location for other cards.
It's a massive airline hub. And I do think it's also worth pointing out that this is a very difficult part of the country to traverse. Like, there is not a lot.
Because it's the lowest population density.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, between the West Coast and Denver, like, that's why this is such a big deal. Because, like, just like being able to connect flights and trains and cars in that part of the country, it's the toughest part of the game. So being able to skip that is a big deal.
It's also why it's the greatest part of the country and where I live. Love the Mountain West. Anyway, to find out what happens next, you're gonna have to come back next week. And we will be back here on the layover to spill all the tea. And there is certainly tea to spill.
The tea will be spilled.
It will.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye. Bye.